Hello, everybody. It's your girl Cheryl and the Old School News Crew one more time, just to talk about the controversial issues of the day. We've got with us Brooke Barrick.
Controversy. Hi.
We've got Sheila Gaskins.
Hey, hi, y'all.
We've got Mike Easterling.
Good day.
And hopefully we have Winston Thomas. We're having a little tech trouble, but we'll see. Do we have you, Winston?
Not yet.
Okay, I don't think so. Okay, but we're going to just go on because it's a lot to talk about, I'm telling you. But this week it was easy where to start. And let me say this up front, because I usually say this at the end, but I want to say this up front. If anyone listening wants to be a part of our panel, wants to talk with us about certain topics, feel free to email me at yourgirlcheryl@gmail.com. Just drop me an email and tell me what subject you might want to talk about, or if you just want to join in and talk about whatever we talk about, that'll be great. And you can hear old episodes of the podcast at yourgirlcheryl.net. So I had to put the commercial in the beginning instead of at the end.
There you go.
So, right. So, to me, the big news of the week, I mean, because lots of things are going on, but this situation down in Georgia with the Georgia governor signing into law, some voter, basically voter suppression is going on down there. And I mean, they're outlawing everything from limiting the number of drop boxes that are in the area to making it illegal, making it a crime to give somebody water if they're standing in line, you know? So we've really gone to an extreme. So, you know, tell me, what are you thinking about this?
Kind of modern day Jim Crow, an attempt to criminalize certain activities that are probably going to affect African-American people more. I mean, we can't take away your right to vote, but we can certainly make it tough for you to exercise that. And they're hoping that the numbers will work out for them. That it's desperation. We're seeing the last vestiges of people trying to hang on to power that they never should have had in the first place.
But the fact that this is so obvious, I mean, why is that not even a problem? It seems to not, I mean, everybody's calling it out, but, you know, nothing's being done.
I don't know. I never thought it would pass. Like you said, it seems so obvious that what's going on, but yet obviously more people turned out for it than against it. It's fear.
I agree with everything Mike said, except for the part about the last vestiges.
Yeah.
On and on. He don't stop until the break of dawn. It just keeps going.
You're right. it's now it's their way of life. This fear, that's their way of life. You know, we're going to fight to hang on to this. It's never going to work, but we're going to fight to hang on to it as long as we can. But you're right.
It's not
the last. It's not the last. You're right.
Well, the whole idea that one man, one vote, I mean, it seems like the Republican Party is just not even believing in that. You know, we're not the majority, but we're going to tell you what to do anyway. We're going to make policy, or we're going to decide what the laws should be.
We're going to make human kindness against the law.
Yeah.
Walking up and say, hey, man, we'd like some water, like a bag of chips. Human kindness, that's against the law.
So...
the people you're being kind to are trying to exercise they're right to vote.
Am I the only one who's not surprised by like literally any of this? Historically speaking, we've made human kindness against the law.
Yeah.
I mean,
at least in the past 4 years.
You know, we come into you know, the nation was founded on people coming onto another piece of land and saying, oh, I want this for myself. And slaughtering people and then kidnapping people because they needed labor. And if they tried to run away so that they could, I don't know, have a decent quality of life, then they would kill them because that was against the law. I mean, it literally never ends. And everything is blatantly obvious along the way. I can't think of any moment in history where what was being done wasn't blatantly, obviously wrong. And yet somehow or another managed to get, you know, the same spin that we get today, which is you keep turning it around and get gaslighted over it. And And nobody, or not nobody, but the people who support it seem to pretend like they believe that it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, so, you know, Fannie Lou Hamer got her butt beat for registering to vote. And then they killed the three guys, chaining them for the Freedom Riders coming down. So this is not out of line of the desperate attempt to remain on top and in control. I'm just upset at the people. Again, this becomes blaming the victim again. And everybody's like, well, we gotta do this. We've been sleeping on this and this. And it's like, you know, Black people tired of all of this. Like they can have Georgia, you know, like all of this for that. So I'm just tired of people beating up Black folk for what we not doing.
Well, you know, I don't see it so much as beating them, but I do think that if
you cut me off. Did you realize that?
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, I've been on the radio and people have been talking about all of this stuff that we as a people need to do when they constantly do this. So this is all the time. And with, I know I'm tired. I don't want to keep fighting a system that's not designed for me. It's like, it takes a lot of energy to outsmart them, to do this, to do that. And don't beat me down for what you think I should do because of what they did. That to me is not cool.
No, I understand what you're saying. I don't see it as a beatdown. I see it more as a challenge. And I agree with you. I'm tired too. I get tired of just hearing the next thing that white folks want to do to mess with other people. Just, you know. And so instead of, I don't see it as a beatdown as much as a challenge. So if you say, okay, we're going to limit the number of drop boxes. Okay, so that just means that we got to find out where the ones that do exist are. And we'll just put some buses together and we'll take everybody on the bus and take them to the drop box. I mean, we just have to go and do six more things to facilitate what you did. And that makes us tired, you know, but we're going to do that because we're not going to let you take this vote away, you know. And I think a lot of times the Democrats have a problem because they always want to be up here with it. They always try to take the high road. And not to say you get to squalor, but and taking the high, you got to be clear and stop being so academic about everything and keep, oh, they're threatening our democracy. Okay, you can say it that way, but you can also say it in a way that people understand it better and say they're trying to take away your vote. They're trying to one man, one vote. They're trying to take that away. If they had said Donald Trump is trying to be a dictator, he wants to be totally in charge instead of saying authoritative rule. And, you know, they're used in terms that I think people are not connecting with. They have to be more specific. Show some pictures of what dictatorships look like and show this is what Donald Trump is trying to do. Are you all still willing to back him with this?
That's that white solidarity. And I don't think they're going to ever change the way it's all perceived. They're never going to side with us for real, for real. They always will twist it so that whiteness still looks okay, despite all of this stuff. But I know I'm exhausted. Georgia, Alabama, all of those places that we sing about and got poems about have been doing this traditionally forever. The poll tax, you had to learn a book this thick and have some information. Your grandfather clause, did your grandfather vote? No, he was a slave. Well, you can't vote either. So it only makes sense. Desperate people do what desperate people do, and they straight up desperate.
Desperate.
Can I real quick, let me just test. Winston, let me see if you're in here. No, still can't hear you. Like I said, I can see you moving, your lips moving, so I know you're talking, but we can't hear you. So we're going to keep going and we're going to work on Winston's tech. Okay.
I can hear.
Oh, so, go ahead. Keep talking, Winston.
It's not clear though.
Okay. All right. So anyway, so we're talking about yeah, this sure. some of these laws that they're passing. And do you think there's going to be any success? I mean, did you even see the video of the legislator who was knocking on the door while the governor was signing the laws, and they dragged her out in handcuffs? You know, I mean, they're not even worried about the visual of that, to let that happen. The visual of all these white men signing, standing behind the governor while he's signing this law, you know, it's so brazen that they don't even care if you know, they don't care that you're calling it Jim Crow 2021. You know, there was a time when if you call somebody racist, that was a bad thing. I don't even think it bothers them that you're calling them a racist.
No, because 4 years of Trump has taken all that off the table. It's legitimized. And if you don't come out there and act your racist self, you're not a good Trumpster. You know, show your racism, be proud of it. I mean, after years and years of people hiding and being clandestine about it, it's okay to come out there and show it now. And people are like, I'm gonna show mine. You know, killing is fine, pushing old people down is fine. Okay, attacking Asian people, all those things, everybody you hated and kept it to yourself, it's now fine. All that hate you had cooped up when Obama was president, it's something you thought you'd never see, you know, and it happened, put fear into your heart, but you kept it to yourself. Trump said, it's fine. I'm sorry I couldn't give you 4 more years to really make it a part of American culture. So people are doing it.
So how far do you think it's going to go? I heard somebody say they expect a civil war. They actually expect us to get in it at a point in this country where, you know, we're actually fighting each other again. You think that that could happen?
Yeah, I don't know. Things are happening that I thought would never happen. So possible. People want to go up against the United States Army. It's not like a bunch of hillbillies running around like it was 100 and some years ago. Okay. It's not like we had a little bit of country, nothing was west of the Mississippi. This is a whole different thing. Okay. Didn't have drones, didn't have long distance firepower. So I think the insurrection emboldened them, but I'd be careful if I stepped into that briar patch.
That's why. Yeah, here's the other kicker, Mike, and it's funny because I just had this conversation about Second Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. With regard to the ability to acquire these things. And I think that the people that we're talking about now have the kind of, like we, a long time ago, people were saying, oh yeah, but it's just the poor white trash. And it's the Jenny Thomas's, Clarence Thomas's wife funding stuff. They're people with money that are backing this. And these same people with money have the money to acquire things like more weapons, bigger weapons. Yeah. And you have to get that, again, going back to what Cheryl was saying about when they decide to give a damn about optics. They decide to give a damn about optics, having white people draw arms on other white people in the United States is going to make the government probably less likely to do it, even if the radicalized right decide that they want to do it. So I think it's an interesting game. I think it's going to be a real interesting game of chicken to see what goes down if it rises to that point.
Are you willing to have a weapon, or do you have a weapon now? Mm-hmm. Any of you?
I'm not.
Can't tell that.
No, you know, I started to make it a more rhetorical question, a more generic kind of question as opposed to you specifically. Or can you see, do you think people should start purchasing weapons?
My dream is to own an arsenal.
Okay, Winston's back.
Why don't you?
Gun blazing.
No, people should think about arming themselves or protecting themselves to a greater level. I don't care if it's the way you do your house, watch where you walk. I mean, you're an old Chinese person walking, or Asian person walking down the street, and of course, always done in a cowardly fashion. This man is pushed down to the ground from behind, by this young Caucasian man. It's all these young people.
Yeah, but did you see what an 89-year-old
woman,
woman beat that man?
Yeah, because they're cowardly dude. These are guys who got beat up in school. I mean, and they feel important. Look at the guy. That's another topic, but yeah, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to just put up as many fences as they can, and as usual, we'll climb them and defeat them, and they'll be more angry.
I know my daughter's generation and their millennials. They are literally doing self defense. They're trying to get licenses for firearms, taking up classes, so they have a different sense of the reality of this thing. I personally, I don't even know where my cell phone is half the time. What if you need a gun? What the heck did I do with it? You know, my own foot. So that's just not me. I'd rather talk my way out of it if I can. But I got a good aim though. Like all of those games that you shooting games. Oh, I got skills in that.
Dude.
I
can't
imagine me having
that could come in handy. You never know.
No, I can't imagine that being in my house because I'm just too silly for that. Mess around and post office trying to deliver something. I'm like, I don't like the way that looks. Bam.
You know. Now I was one who, you know, was not wanting to have a gun in the house and, you know, for a long time. But, you know, I'm starting to see the rationale now, you know. Just what you were saying, Brooke, you know, things are changing. And it just might be a smart thing just to have it, you know, because things are popping off at any given time.
I think
an
airplane would be a better thing to have. get out of Dodge. Y'all have this fight. You do what you want to do. I'm out.
Obviously, that's not a way of life, but it's that once in a lifetime occasion when you'll need it, and it'll make all the difference in the world. So I think we're at a point where we do need to prepare for that moment. That moment is more likely to happen now, probably more so than any other time in our lifetime anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Because even with, I mean, whether it's against these Republican right wingers or, you know, whether it's them or even in these mass shooting situations, you know, where the only thing to fight against a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun kind of thing. I don't know if that's always the case, but it could be beneficial.
I ain't even a Christian, but I gotta ask, like, what happened to love your enemy and all that other stuff?
It's somebody not to say else. You don't. Somebody else wrote that, you know, that's not real. You know, that's not applicable to everyday life. Nice philosophy.
But even if it was, I don't think that is against that. Loving, you can love your enemy, but if you walk into a grocery store and somebody is in there with an AR-57 shooting and you pull out yours and shoot back, that's not loving your enemy. That's stopping somebody from hurting more. You.
It's a 15, Cheryl. It's a 15, AR-15.
What did I 57, say?
AR 57.
Oh, okay. See, that's why I need to go somewhere and get trained because
57 is Heinz varieties.
Okay. Okay.
If you're hungry.
That's when you put the ketchup on your shirt so it looks like you got shot. I got it.
Or you're like Ted Cruz and you're cooking bacon on your gun when you're shooting it. And then you put the hot sauce on it.
That is sad individual, like to me. Just a joke, a walking joke, Ted Cruz.
Yeah, a lot of those guys, you know, and I even heard Lindsey Graham say he has an AR. What did you say it is, Winston, again?
15.
AR-15. I heard Lindsey Graham, of all people, you know perfectly well he don't have no gun like
that. No, no.
And if he did, he's not doing anything with it.
He's exactly the kind of person that would have it because he can't fight.
So you think he just gets dressed up and puts on his bulletproof jacket and stuff and poses with the gun?
In the mirror. Huh? He in the mirror. Would you say? You talking to me?
That's what I think. That's what I think.
The school shooters are the ones that are bullied and picked on that ain't got squat to stand on. They're the ones that go out and buy the artillery because they can't fight.
Yeah, because when you see these guys, I don't know if you saw, it was like a little film clip of the Republicans who went down to the border and they were in this speedboat and they all have on their jackets and their guns all on the boats and stuff. They're going down to look at the immigration situation. Why are you down there with rifles and guns? You know, it's like this macho thing, like they're trying to present. And even with a lot of the Republicans, even in their advertising and their political campaigns, for some reason, having guns in your ads is an advantage. I don't know what male or female. I don't know why that is, that connection with guns and Republicans and being conservative. You know, I don't understand that connection. Why?
It's fear. Just like Brooke suggested, they're scared to death, and that's the only thing that makes them feel, you know, somewhat protected.
It's all it is. It's something that they never thought would happen. You know, I'm sure their parents said, you know, before we'll have a black president in this country, elephants will fly. And after Barack Obama was elected, ever since then, they've been looking up. Okay. Because all of a sudden, I don't know what might have, that they could start to fly. It's terror, something that you never thought would happen. You were raised to think, your father, your grandfather, all the people in your neighborhood said, this is the way life is going to be. And now it's not that. To your disadvantage, it's fear.
Explain to me why people seem to have so much more of a problem with this than Black people. I mean, Black people have been living in fear and stress and, disappointment and everything else for years, but we're not going out there doing mass shootings and buying guns and all that kind of. Why is it that Black people seem to handle this in a way different than white people are handling it?
I don't think that's true. I think
really,
I think the difference is number one, publicity, number two, access to the more expensive, like. Because think about it. If you look back in like the late 80s, when, you know, you had the drug wars going on all up and down the East Coast, it's portrayed differently. We don't have the same kind of mass shooting, but we're killing each other. Every race is doing that. That ain't news. But again, we talk about black on black crime, and then we talk about mass shootings. We don't say white on white crime, right? So the way we portray this is though, you know, shootings that take place in urban areas are the everyday norm, and that's what happens in cities because, you know, people kill each other. But then when white people do it, it's like this big surprise and it's something different. The truth.
Oh, no, wait, because it is something different if in an urban setting, if you're talking about black on black crime and a black person goes into a store and robs a store and shoots somebody, the motivation for that is thought is to be the money. They wanted the money, they wanted the food, whatever it is, okay? But when somebody walks into a grocery store and just shoots randomly and kills 10 people, we don't know what the motivation of that is. So there's a difference. And
they're not just picking off people for money. There are people who are picking off people for beef. There are people who are picking off people because they feel disrespected. There are people who are, there's all kinds of different reasons for why people are picking off people.
And no, but I'm saying that the difference in that kind of one-on-one crime and the difference in a mass thing is that the motivation is different. So I'm trying to understand why that is. Why you don't see, and I'm not saying it never happens, but you don't hear of Black people going around and just randomly shooting people they don't know, and seemingly for no reason. I mean, it could be mental illness, it could be a variety of things, but we don't know. No, I'm saying generally, I said, I know it has happened, but I'm saying generally speaking.
Correct. I compare the black on black crime situation with the Italians when they first, I don't know what the word is, when they first started to evolve, all the great gangsters that they romanticized, the Al Capones, the Bugsy Malones, all of gangsters that they, for whatever reason, it was respectable with them because they made movies of them. They write books about them. Goodfellas, The Godfather, all that stuff is, I don't know, it's looked at as classic America, I guess. But they don't equate that with the same thing going on with the drug gangs and what have you within the black population. So it's just a different standard, but in keeping with what you said, Cheryl, yeah, our murder, our crime tends to have a motivation. It's either drug territories, gang turfs, some domestic, you know, she said beef. Yeah, but vast majority has got to do with either business or gang territory.
Correct.
But my question has to do with the inability to handle the stress of life, apparently, that white people are feeling. So it makes them go out and do these kinds of things. So we were talking about the guns and all of that, you know, and that people are feeling, white people feel like they're not, that they have to protect themselves. Okay, thanks. Like they feel like they have to protect themselves or their lifestyle is changing, their world is changing. And because of that, they're so, I'm sorry?
I said, there you go.
Right, they feel like their lifestyle is changing so much and they're having difficulty dealing with that. So they got to go out and shoot up a grocery store. White black people's lives are changing like that every day. I've always been oppressed in certain ways, but they don't go out and shoot up stores. They might shoot you because you're sitting next to them and they feel like you disrespected them and that anger comes out. But I can understand that. I don't understand how your stress comes out by going and just shoot up a bunch of people you don't know in a store. I don't understand that inability to handle stress or that response to it.
I'll be honest, I don't understand either one of them, truthfully. But on the flip side, like, it's not incongruent with, like, our history. Because at the end of the day, you know, what was in their brain that said, okay, I'm going to go over here and I'm going to use guns to say, I don't know you, but you ain't human and therefore you're going to work for me. I don't know you, but I'm going to wipe you out because I think you're savage. I don't know you, but it's all about defending what they believe is their right to have something. I think that's really at the core. They believe that they have more of a right to have something. And when that is threatened or compromised or something stands in their way, then their solution is, you know, take it or just destroy whatever they perceive to be the problem.
Yeah, so like if your life is always green lights and then all of a sudden you have a yellow or red light, you're like, what? I don't understand this. Because I know when the pandemic happened and white women were on TV talking about they can't pay their bills. They were frantic. I can't pay my bills. And I'm like, girl, please. It come and come. I can tell you when you're going to get the cutoff notice. Like, I know the steps. So, but the fact that they were like really anxious about that tells me that that is something that they never have to deal with. And that's true.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I told Cheryl years ago a story. Had an older white guy I used to run into at the Barnes & Noble up here in Towson. And one day he was like really depressed, you know, almost in tears. I don't know, he might've been in his early 70s. And he sat down, had a coffee with me, and he says, I'm down to my last 5,000. my account. I don't know what I'm going to do. I was like, you idiot. 5,000.
It's like that kid that got that went on the joyride, went out drinking with his friend, the teenager, and the judge said he had affluenza. I was like, well, what about all these poor kids out here that are suffering from the stress and they ain't got nothing? Like that to me seems the more viable reason to cut the fool. Woo.
Yeah, and it's funny, Brooke, I mean, I want what you were saying, because I understand what you're saying, Sheila, but you know, I think what Brooke said about that entitlement that goes beyond, Sheila, what you're talking about is, you know, white people being used to a certain thing.
That's entitlement.
Even before that, I mean, before you get used to it, the entitlement makes you get used to it. And I just cannot figure out why white folks feel like they're entitled. I don't understand. I mean, it's like a basic, and when they use the term white supremacy, a lot of people don't like that term. It's not to say that white people are supreme, but they believe they are. And until we get to that, why is that? And sort of knock that down, you know, and they're always talking about, oh, we need to open the conversation. I mean, I don't need to open the conversation. I don't need to talk about this. This is you. This is not on me. This is on white folks need to change their thought. You know, it's not, I can't change your thought about yourself or about anybody else. You have to do that. And one of the things they have to do is get rid of this idea that they're entitled or that they're superior or anything like that.
Well, you know, they've had a long run. You gotta admit, they've had a long run of they've had a long run of things going their way. So I'm quite sure. I'm quite sure it's shocking, you know, to have step aside and take a back seat sometimes. So they're adjusting, you know.
And Winston ain't exaggerating when he says a long run. Like, we think within the context, and unfortunately, most of this nation thinks within the context of this nation. But the truth of the matter is, my girlfriend, who's an Egyptologist, we were talking about how this whole European domination mentality thing goes all the way back to the Romans in Egypt and Cleopatra and Mark Antony and all of that. It is ingrained in a way of thinking that somehow or another, you're supposed to be the chosen ones, manifest destiny. What other terms have they thrown at it?
Now, you know, what's funny, in reality, it's rare that you see the truly wealthy whites displaying this violent behavior. So really, we're talking about the poor whites who still believe they were one step ahead of, you know, Blacks and Hispanics, whoever. Now, when they see that threatened, they're seeing more and more people of color living at a higher standard than they do.
Yep. They're seeing more and more elephants fly.
That's who's pulling the guns out the quickest.
Yep. That's exactly right. I agree with you, Winston, 1,000%. The one thing that Bubba had, okay, when even his own people made jokes about it, okay, because I think I may have mentioned it before, Jeff Foxworthy made a whole career out of making fun of his own people. You know, you might be a redneck, okay? Sold out to concerts, joking, and those people said they couldn't strike out at Black. So you know how they feel. They're like, okay, I might be a redneck, you're right, but at least I am white, all right? At least I'm, then all of a sudden he's realizing that doesn't mean that much. They're still laughing at me. And then here comes Trump to say, I feel your pain. Okay. And he was just their hero. He legitimized their thoughts and told them, go ahead and act out your feelings. And they're doing it. They're showing their act. But upper class people are like, yeah, let's let those dummies fight for us. We'll sit back here on our yachts and let them fight for us. Because his party's got two people, his followers got two segments. Those who have a lot to lose, rich people, and those who have nothing to lose, poor people, super poor people. Okay, the ones that live down here near me in northern Kentucky and southwestern Indiana, in those hills. So it's a perfect party. You got one people who have the haves and the other people who are protecting their money and finances, and the other people just protecting their whiteness. They got the money and finances to protect. Gotta have my whiteness. You know, I'll be damned if I'm gonna give it up without a fight.
To your point, Mike. As I'm sitting here stooping in it, and you're talking about it's the poor white people, da, 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 da. The truth of the matter that this whole thing is about wealth. Like everything is about the manipulation of wealth.
Everything.
Even the notion of white and black is still about wealth. Mm-hmm. And convincing a larger group of white people that they're better than because they're not black was still about controlling wealth and for the few that were sort of running the show, if you will. And it's never really been about anything other than that. Race, thinking back to the movie Get Out, right? Where he says, why black people? And he's like, that's just, incidental. That just happened to be the thing that we decided to roll with. It was arbitrary. It became the reason why black people were enslaved didn't have anything to do with their inferiority or superiority or anything else. It had to do with the people who had money had a logistical problem with the indigenous people of the United States of America because they knew how to fight on their own territory and they knew. And they weren't able from a biological standpoint to manage the diseases that were coming over. So by kidnapping black people and bringing them to the United States, you had free labor that was easy to identify that didn't know the territory. So you created labor that you had more power and control over because you could tell the difference between yourself and them, and they couldn't navigate the territory as easily as the people who were already here. So the fact that we were black was incidental. It was a logistical reason.
But they also went in there and got the planters. They got the best black slaves. They intentionally went in there and started with the best.
Right. So the stronger, the bigger, the faster, the whatever you were, the more they wanted.
Who knew how to do this? Who knew how to do that? Who knew how to do all of these things? So it was intentional. Like, we're going in here, we're going to get the best out of this. And then it will trickle down to everybody else. I just wanted to read this passage that I saw on somebody's Facebook page. It said, white supremacy won't die until white people see it as a white issue they need to solve, rather than a black issue they need to empathize with.
Did I write that? Is that something I wrote? No, I've been saying, that's my point.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why it annoys me so much when I hear people say, we need to open the dialogue or we need to talk. No, we don't need to talk. It's not on us. Everybody always wants to put stuff on black folks and it's not on us.
Right.
This is a white issue. And there are some people who've moved from it, but there's a growing, or like we've been saying, Mike has been saying, a large population that has been given permission from Donald Trump, of all people, to move forward with that thought.
Reactions, yes.
Right, in some kind of way, we have to address that, that sense of entitlement, that sense of superiority, that sense of being able to act out on it. Like you said, with the Asian hate thing that's going on, the thing that I find so odd about that is they're attacking, because black people have been attacked, other people have been attacked, but the thing that's sort of different, it seems that the Asian people are being, it's unprovoked. Like you said, they'll be walking past and then they just all of a sudden, slam somebody, and a lot of elderly people. And, so it's this idea that I can do this and nothing's going to happen to me.
Nothing's going to happen. Yeah.
Right. And that it can go to that level. You don't, at least when the white guys killed the black guy that tied him to the back of a truck and dragged him, They at least went somewhere. They didn't do that in the middle of the street in downtown Baltimore. They did that somewhere in the backwoods somewhere, you know? But now we're just going to do what we're going to do right in your face.
Dump's going to protect us.
Yeah.
Dump's going to protect us. It's amazing. I always, whenever I get in my car between noon and three, I put on Rush Limbaugh to listen. I need the comic relief. But I'm amazed at the way that Trump, and especially Limbaugh nowadays, that are almost like deities to these people. You know, the way they refer to him, they know the show would have no ratings without him. They play back. Let's listen now to what Russ had to say back in 2000 when he spoke about some. Let's give it a listen, shall we? And then after, you know, they play that, and then people will call in and they're like bowing. Oh, I'm so-and-so, first time caller, mega dittos. I tried and tried to call when Mr. Limbaugh, not Rush, when Mr. Limbaugh was alive and I couldn't get through, but I'm through now and I'm just so thankful to the Lord that I was able to get, shut up. But people are just drunk on, you know, you had the team captain, Trump, and then you had the head cheerleader, Limbaugh, okay? He would call a play, whether the play was good or not, the head cheerleader would go, would cheer. Just like in real, you know, football, your team is behind, you still cheering. He stirred up when you listen. Stuff that even Trump wouldn't say out loud, he could say. And I listened to him all the time just to hear the stupidity and still those who are still drinking that Kool-Aid or in that trance. And those are the people who are walking around doing what we've been talking about all day. This guy, they just worship this person. I don't get it. But
you know what? Go ahead, Winston.
You know what I'm saying? But it just drops on us.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. No, I didn't have anything to say.
Going back to what you were about to say about that sense of entitlement and you know, people feeling emboldened. I guess it's more emboldened, if you will. But again, going back to if a judge decides, you know, that this kid shouldn't be punished because he was raised wrong and he's got affluenza or whatever, there's a perpetual messaging that's going out that says you have this privilege. You know, you can get away with this thing and we're just gonna slap you on the wrist. Like, who was the white college kid out in Stanford that raped the girl behind the dumpster and the two gay guys found, like, chased him down on their bicycles? And he goes to trial and he gets, what, 3 months because he's got his whole life ahead of him. And
oh, yeah.
You know, he deserves a second chance. Why? Right. And then Brian Banks goes to jail for years and the girl lied. And here we are, fast forward, he gets out, but his whole career and everything else was trashed. So we send the signal every day. You know, Roethlisberger, yeah, Pittsburgh, you know who I'm talking about. I always mess up pronunciation of his name, right? Continued to throw the pigskin for years, but Colin Kaepernick, hello, take a knee and you have no career. Like, we could go down this line of, you know, we can't even slightly step out of line without fear of losing our job, our life, our access to things. But on the flip side, it's like, oh, you're good. We got you. Oh, it was a mental health issue. Oh, they made a mistake. Oh, they deserve a second chance. Oh, he was just a kid. The whole dialogue around everything is changed once that color line is brought up.
Fact. Straight fact.
Right. And I think when you start off and you said, we send the message every day, I don't know, the we is the people who are in control send that message every day. I think the we, as in the, you know, the Black community, you know, is you receive the message and you see it. And like I said, you know, who calls this out? When we started the program earlier today and started off talking about Governor Kemp of Georgia and that he was gonna sign this bill, And you know, he was able to do that and put it on, you know, live stream it, and everybody watched him do it, watched him make a crime out of giving water to people standing in a line. I mean, come on. And we just watching it, you know, the fact that he was even able to do that, you know, so now that, you know, we get these messages every day that explain white supremacy or entitlement. But my question is, what are you going to do? How do you make people believe that they're not superior? There's a psychologist, I don't know her name. I've brought her up before. I need to find it out because I bring her up frequently. The older white woman who does these race relations, she deals with race relations, and she asked this question to an audience of white people, young people in particular, I think, and says, how many of you did, you know, and you think that racism has changed and Black people have achieved and da, 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 da. And, but her final question is, how many of you would change places with a Black person? How many of you would be willing to live your life as a Black person? And not one person raises their hand.
Right, Jane Elliott. I mean, Smith.
What is her name?
I think it's Jane Smith.
Yeah, I'm looking it up.
Jane Smith, that's simple.
Okay. Jane. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, and the fact that white people know that, regardless of what's going on, they still would rather not. And Chris Rock says that too. He has that in his comedy routine, that as rich as he is, and as well and as positive and successful as he's been, there's not a white person in the room, even the busboy, who would change places with him as to be a Black guy.
And that's it right there. That's it in a nutshell. That is it in a nutshell.
Okay. Well, logically, would you want, let's say it was us and we even had the air of superiority. Would you want to give that up logically? Would you want to be on the same or lower level? I don't think so.
No. But
you know what? But I've also seen the statistics of how many Black people would make that change. If you had the opportunity to be white, would you? And Black people don't generally go in that direction. It's not that Black people
are
not unanimous.
They don't say.
They don't necessarily want to be white. They want things
to change.
No, they don't
want to be white.
Right. They don't admire white people enough to want to be white. They want things to change, but they don't want to be white. No, no, I'm saying
I don't want to be white.
They don't want raisins.
Wait.
So they don't want raisins in their potato salad. So,
with the exception of Rachel Dolezal, when you ask the question per Jane, right? The response for white people is unanimously no.
No.
But I would dare say that there are a whole lot of Black people who, when given the option, would take, well, I'm not saying the majority, but enough to make
agreed.
It significant.
I know people
who have said it in conversation. Like, and then there are the people who don't just like, well, I'm Kablan Asian, right? It's like there is this whole desire, mm-hmm. I'm biracial or whatever it is, to be able to identify as anything other than Black because they feel like it's a step up.
Right.
Oh, I
would state it differently. I wouldn't say they feel like it's a step up.
Right.
I think they feel like if being Black is just a handicap. I don't think they feel like being white is a step up.
Wait. So if you think of one as being a handicap and then the other one is not, that's a step up by definition.
True.
Yeah. I think it depends on the emotional value you put on it. Yeah, it's a step up. It certainly is life improvement. Let's say that. Life improvement, yeah.
It's just that everything that is negative and ugly is considered Black, and nobody wants that. So I don't want to be white, but I would like to get a break and get some credit. I would like to get to slide if the police pull me over. So I don't want to be white, but I want to have some privileges associated with the color of my skin that doesn't exist now.
Right. And that was what the study that I saw, that's what, and this was a while back, I will admit, but that was the thought, the sentiment, what Sheila just said. It's not, I don't want to be white, but I don't want this handicap of being Black, which is different. But Black people, and this is another whole show, another whole topic, Black people have been doing things to emulate white folks for a while, you know? And one of the biggest issues I have is Black women with butt weaves, hair weaves down the butt, you know, I mean, come on, with the straight hair, and I mean, and then want to say, you know, that's a, there's only one thing you're trying to emulate with that. If you want people to believe that's your natural hair, if you just throw that on one day as a decoration, that's one thing, but, you know, but that's another show, another topic. But but this idea of entitlement, and I just wonder, how do you make somebody not understand that they're not superior and that they are not entitled? How do you make somebody?
They don't want to believe that. They will fight that tooth and nail. Who would give that up voluntarily?
Nobody.
Well, it's not about it being voluntarily. I mean, Black people accept things every day that's not voluntary. I mean, being a slave wasn't voluntary, but you accepted it.
That's going up.
Cheryl, you posed a question about how do you, I can't even remember now because it was a while ago and I didn't write it down, but you posed a question about choosing, now I can't remember, but my answer, I had the solution is still stuck, which is to begin to question and examine our own values. Because what happens is we end up playing the game, right? With people who invented the game, who make the rules to the game, who arbitrarily change the rules to the game, but then we keep insisting on playing the game. And so then we say, how do we, like, you know, going back to the whole thing about, you said something about we don't perpetuate white supremacy or whatever, but we do. We contribute to it because there are those things that we value that are in alignment with white supremacy that we continue to perpetuate and look at as something esteemed or something to value or something to go after or something to be proud of. And so it's about shifting our values. So, oh, listen to how well they speak English. All right. So when we talk about when Martin Luther King used big words, and that was part of the reason why people were so impressed by him, right? Oh, he goes to Harvard. Right. So there's all of these things that we take a look at and we say, oh, because they rose to this thing within this society in this manner. And it's not a simple analysis, but you have to start questioning those things that you value and what those things are that we continue to promote. If we continue to promote that hoarding as much wealth as feasibly possible that you can possibly muster up and competing against other people who already have and going for whatever is the way to go. And that's, you know, if we're trying to look for equity in the system of inequity, then we have to question our own motivations, right? And those things that we value. If we value the almighty dollar, take a look at who's on it.
Well, you know, it's interesting. One of the reasons that I really liked the movie Black Panther, and it's not my favorite movie or anything, but I liked it. But one of the things I liked about it was that it gave you the impression of what life would have been, could have been like if white colonization had not come into play. This is what Black people's lives, the direction it could have gone in. And that was sort of at the basis of the movie, this idea of whether or not they were going, Wakanda was going to stay a small country and develop just for its own citizens or go out into the world and conquer the world like white people had done, you know? So it was sort of this, that was sort of an underlying thing, I think, in it. And that's sort of what I took from it. And so it's hard to imagine because we let those kinds of issues into every part of our lives. Black people value a lot that white people do and a lot about white culture that influences us. And I was just talking about Black women's hair a little while ago. I mean, that's a whole, you know, not just the hair, but just visual. I mean, all about the way we live our lives and our lifestyles. I'm sorry, say that again.
Yeah, I don't think black men try to emulate white men at all.
Oh no.
For another conversation.
Not the physical thing. Well, maybe. But there are some white men, black men, who I think do want to be white. You know, Clarence Thomas. He's like, I'm almost there. If I was only white, I'd be complete. I got the wife. I got the job. But I'm dark skinned.
Still got nappy hair.
Exactly. Lester Holt probably liked to be white.
We have not talked about the inferiority that black people live with every day in this conversation. And that to me is a whole nother hour.
Wait, what do you mean the inferiority that they feel? Or
the inferiority that I have watched black be so negative that I feel that same way too. I feel negative. Yeah. I don't feel good enough. I don't feel worthy. So therefore, I've taken on this whole white gaze, I'm taking that on and I'm feeling bad myself.
You say you're actually you or I a generic?
I collectively. So, I mean, I'm talking me now, but we have not mentioned inferiority. We talked about how black people want to be white, but we have not talked about why the inferiority part, which is long and deep and
well, you know, I mean, in that regard, you can go back to the black women's hair thing. And I was just watching this on TV. It came on. It's an old movie that Chris Rock produced a while back called Good Hair. Mm-hmm. And the whole pretty idea that you would call black
people. He stole that from a black woman, by the way.
Well, I mean, he didn't steal. I mean, that's a term that
he stole that from a black woman.
Let's get to Cheryl's point.
At the festival when Good Hair by a black woman was at the festival, the same movie, and then Chris took that same movie. I saw the original movie by the black woman. He stole it.
Okay, he stole it. I want to hear Cheryl's point.
Go ahead. Okay, the point was that the idea that we would consider our own hair good hair and bad hair, but it's only good hair if it simulates white people's hair, and it's bad hair if it's our own natural hair. And we have been perpetuating that for years and still are to this day, okay?
You know, so, Cheryl. Sure, I think this should be very clear. You'll love this as being a Trekkie. We have effectively been assimilated. They are Borg, and we have been okay. And that's just the truth of the matter. I think the inferiority thing Sheila was talking about, I think that varies from person to person.
Correct.
So, and I, you know, that depends on, you know, I don't know, a lot of factors, but I don't think we all suffer from that to the same degree. But I will say, I think most people recognize in America that they do have the upper hand, and to really believe that we could rise up and conquer them is pretty much silly. They have so much of an upper hand that it's pretty much hopeless.
Do you really believe that?
Yeah.
The Panthers.
Yes.
I was about to say, have you not been listening to him?
Look at the numbers. Look at the numbers.
Wait a minute. Let me run down some reality. Here's what it comes down to. If you don't own the weaponry, you're not conquering nothing. Okay, so if you can't tell me how many nukes you have, how many drones you have, you're not conquering anything. So from that point of view, that's where I'm speaking from. Push comes to the shove, they can destroy all of us anytime. Yeah. Not a problem.
Well, I think right now you're right, but I was thinking more.
Right now, since forever.
No, I think with the growing population of people of color and the changing of the guard in a lot of ways, more and more people of color are in charge of certain things and can be in the future. At this point, the one thing I do know after the Trump era is anything can happen. And after this pandemic, anything can happen. So I'm not saying it's going to happen or even that it's probable, but I think everything's on the table. Anything's possible at this point.
Well, two things, Cheryl. One, I think to Winston's point, as long as your whole definition of conquering and being in charge and the whole nine yards is defined by the same set of standards, then yeah, we're not gonna get there. And it'll never happen. And it'll certainly never happen in the United States because it's by design. And secondly, with regard to Sheila and the whole thing with regard to inferiority, again, let's go back to the root of the inferiority, which is again, by design, because for an economic standpoint, in order to convince poor white people that it was okay to have other sources of labor and not pay them wages, they had to be able to say, these Black people are inferior and chattel, and therefore we could put them on a lower level than you. So that way you don't have white people rising up like they're rising up about immigrant labor now. Because back then, poor white people were like, oh yeah, they're below me, they're slaves, not recognizing that what white people were doing was not paying them.
Yep. Yep. It's you know, and LBJ said that. He said two true things. What you just said, if you let any white man feel that he's superior, okay, to any Black man, no matter what, he said, you can pick his pocket and take whatever you want from. And it's true. You saw those fools down there in the insurrection. Most of them were low-level people, probably funded by high-level Republicans, but he got them believing that, hey, you can do anything. You let them know that you're superior to Black people. Let me go back to Cheryl's point, though, of inferiority. I think that's a good topic. We talked about it now. But there's also another inferiority. I don't know if you guys agree. I go Winston, especially as a man, and that's white male inferiority. Okay. I think a lot of white males deep inside feel inferior to Black men. Okay.
Oh, that's a fact.
Say yeah. It again. Yeah.
I and said, that's a fact.
Absolutely. Okay. So you and I in agreement. I call pistols and rifles, those are my words here, penis extensions. Okay. When I got my gun, I'm every bit of man as you. Okay, when you see a cop just go to work on a guy for almost nothing but a billy club, even his partner's trying to stop him, that's a guy who's like letting out years of pent-up inferiority to Black men. Okay, cut me.
And you know what's interesting, absolutely. Mike? That had never crossed my mind until what? You just said that.
Oh,
it had never
absolutely.
Crossed my mind. However, that's a really good topic for another day. So
penis
we're going
to
have to end it here on that note.
Oh,
I would
think,
love
you
to
think
continue to talk about that one.
That was not, wasn't that, that was very nice, Cheryl. Very
thank
nice
you.
Transition. Very,
it.
Very nice
it.
Transition. Said,
Sheila
what?
Tried to come in there on me, but I had to block her out. Okay, anyway. But I thank you all. I thank you all one more time for being here. I tell you, I had a whole list of things to talk about we didn't even get to because this conversation just rolled, but I'm so glad it did. I want to thank the Old School News crew. I want to thank Sheila Gaskins.
Yeah, and bring some white people on here so we can really have a conversation.
You know, I can, well, I will, but I don't want it to be any of my friends because that's going to be the end of some of the friendships if I did that. We want to thank Mike Easterling.
That's right, yo. Thank you.
We want to thank Winston Thomas.
All righty.
And we want to thank Brooke Barrick.
Funny you brought that up, Cheryl, because I'm like now, uh-oh, somebody may hear this and keep me from my next job. But anyway.
I know. I have to be cautious of where I post this podcast sometimes.
Beauty of being retired.
Conversation.
I am.
I always appreciate you guys being here. I thank you so much. If anybody else wants to join the conversation, just email me at yourgirlscheryl@gmail.com. Let me know and we'll put you right on. And also, if you want to hear some of our previous podcasts, go to yourgirlscheryl.net. And check out the website there, right there on the homepage. You can go back and hear a couple of episodes. So thank you all so much. The weather is picking up here on the East Coast. The sun has been out. So if you get a chance, go out. Don't let the pandemic keep you in. Get some sun, that vitamin D. Everybody have a really great week, okay?
All right.
Thank you. See you later.
Bye, y'all.
Hey, sure.